usually joins us in studio, but we're not there. So Colin Livingston will join us over the phone. Colin, good afternoon. Well, I got to get your thoughts. I know, of course, you do a lot of karting yourself, but an interesting take slash comments from Roman Grosjean in regards to go-karting, because he mentioned, "I was more tired than after a Grand Prix because you were pushing all the time. In F1, we are saving fuel and also the tires." What do you make of that? Were you surprised by his comments?
Well, more importantly, were you guys surprised by his comments? Because, you know, you guys see my fat backside walk into the studio every week, and, you know, you hear me complain about, you know, issues that we have and, you know, how I'm sore from this, that, or the other thing. I actually am quite surprised. I mean, you know, 125cc engine is what he's talking about. That's the same thing that's the exact same engine that we run. But like he says, you know, when they get long straightaways and they get a lot of time to kind of, you know, relax. While you're driving in a straight line, it doesn't matter how fast you're going. That's, you know, drivers are making adjustments to their steering wheels, sending text messages practically. They get a lot of time to recover. In the go-kart, we don't. We have straightaways, but they're so quick, you don't really get that chance to recover your breathing. You know, I wouldn't have ever compared what we do to, you know, to that of an F1 driver, but it was really interesting that they threw that out here last week.
Now, speaking of F1, I know you were in Ferrari's garage recently in Montreal, and you're telling me how not only do they have 40 to 75 team members at the track on race day, they've got like 40 or 5 engineers back in Italy watching this race and taking like the telemetry and the data and everything. Is that accurate? That many, like, so there's over 100 people just to make the car go?
Yeah, I mean, the average team, like a team like Ferrari, has somewhere in the neighborhood of like 800 or 900 employees just dedicated to the F1 program. You know, Mercedes has hundreds of employees, but as far as dedicated to, you know, to the racing part of things, you know, not their fabricators, not the machinists, not the shipper receiver people, you know, there's like 150 people just on a race weekend. And what was really cool is, as we're standing in Ferrari's garage, there's a monitor that has a live feed back to, you know, Ferrari's factory in Maranello, where there's 45 engineers, 50 engineers just pouring over the telemetry and, you know, the car data. That's what we saw. But then we're talking to some of the crew guys, and they're letting us know, like, you know, that's just on the race car side of things. Then they have a dedicated driver who sits in the simulator, and this is, you know, like, I have a really, really cool racing simulator. The simulator that they use is, you know, multi-million dollar, you know, super accurate, that as they're taking the data off of the cars, and you know, keep in mind, as we were practicing in Montreal, it was like, you know, 2 or 3 p.m., which puts it at, you know, 8 or 10 o'clock in Maranello. So they've already worked a full day, and they have to adjust around whatever the race schedule is. So this could be at 3 o'clock in the morning for them in some parts of the world. It could be any time of day that they're doing this. But they take proposed settings that they want to try and put into the actual race car. They give it to the simulator driver. They can program this in such a way that he can tell, you know, if they apply this to Sebastian Vettel's car or, you know, whoever's car, and most of the big teams do this, that instead of wasting time at the track, burning through tires and fuel and wasting time, they've already got their next set of things done. So that's another set of engineers that just sits around a simulator taking that data and you know, applying it, which is way more cost effective. It was overwhelming to know, you know, how deep and how detailed these guys run their program.
Colin Livingston joins us, Racing Report. Colin, let's talk a little bit about the NASCAR and what happened with Ross Chastain being stripped of a win.
Holy moly! Like, this is the big news from NASCAR, unfortunately, this week was all penalties, and it was all you know, all negative. You know, I didn't get the chance to see the race, but I spent a lot of time this week looking at the videos, trying to figure out, you know, where some of the stuff came from. Ross Chastain, you know, obviously he had a big issue with his truck, and this is a new rule this year for NASCAR, because up until now they had what was called encumbered wins, which means when they, you know, a team would win a race, they went through post-race inspection, And if they had a technical issue, they would not pay, you know, the prize money. They wouldn't give the points, but the driver and the team still was allowed to say that they had the win. And, you know, the win wouldn't allow them, if that was their only win, it wouldn't automatically qualify them to get into the playoffs. What they're doing now is they're actually, like, stripping all this stuff, and they're getting rid of this encumbered win, which is the only thing that makes sense. If you're caught cheating, or you're caught, you know, out of the technical guidelines, I think it's a positive move that NASCAR has finally done. It's the only thing that makes sense. So Chastain's truck was found to be too low in post-race inspection. The official that was interviewed said when they measure these things, and we see it in the Pinty series as well, when they measure the car or the truck, you've got a certain guideline. You've got to be a minimum height. If you're too low, that means that you're, you know, you've got less air resistance and you can potentially go quicker. So there's stated minimums. When they do the height measurement, there's kind of a yellow warning zone. If you're in there, you still have to make sure that you're, that you're not into the red. They were past the red. Like, their truck was so low it wasn't even close. And what NASCAR will do is they'll give the teams a chance to refuel the vehicle, to put air back in the tires up to the maximum spec of the tire supplier, and in this case it's Goodyear. But they were so far out, you know, the only thing that they could say is they thought that they sustained some damage in the race, and that led to the finding. Now it goes to an appeals board, but that rarely, if ever, changes anything.
And Johnny Sautner, as a Colin Livingston joins us in the Racing Report, brought to you by Cantor, a one-race suspension for his incident with Austin Hill, which I watched the videos really kind of going back and forth, and you could just see it escalating, and he gets a one-race suspension. Now, how often do guys get one-race suspensions?
I don't remember a driver getting a suspension like this for an on-track incident. I know what's happened. I just can't think of a reference. Typically, if a driver's going to get suspended, it's because of like a drug issue or a substance issue, something against an official. This is really unique, but, you know, as you alluded to, there was a lot that led up to the final situation with, you know, Hill, you know, getting into Sauter, then Sauter retaliating, or, you know, pardon me, it started with Sauter kind of getting into Hill, Hill retaliating, which kind of caused a caution flag. He, you know, Austin Hill spun Johnny Sauter. You know, Sauter went up into the wall, and that's bad, and that happens, you know, quite a bit. But the difference between what Hill did to Sauter and what Sauter did to Hill is that, you know, Johnny Sauter hunted him down under a caution flag. So the big issue with caution is that, you know, you can potentially have track workers on, you know, cleaning up debris. You have safety vehicles on track. You know, to retaliate in that fashion is what NASCAR is really, you know, saying is the no-no. They ended up parking him for that infraction after about 130 of 200 laps, and then, you know, just, you know, like we said, this week issued the penalty where he'll get plenty of time to sit back, and he's already announced he's running a dirt race with Dick Trickle this week. So, you know, while he won't be in the truck, he's still going to get out there and race with one of the coolest names in racing.
Now, the Carters, you guys had your race postponed last night, obviously due to the wet conditions. So when you postpone on a Wednesday, do you get to make that up during the week, or do you just have to wait till next Wednesday?
What we're doing, we can't really amend the schedule. We're just adding this race on. I think we're looking at the first Wednesday in September. Just unfortunate. I mean, theoretically, we could have run the carts. It wasn't about whether or not the carts will run in the rain or not. The temperature didn't work in our favor. So, you know, I've run in some pretty cold stuff. We all have. But at 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, it was 6 degrees. And with the rain, that would have been just pure misery for all the drivers, especially our volunteers that come out and help us out. But the main reason we had to, you know, postpone it is because the paddock was underwater. We wouldn't have been able to get our vehicles in without really chewing up the infield. So I don't think anyone had a lot of interest in going out there and developing hypothermia. So, so be it.
Well, that makes sense. Well, good luck with that, Colin. I appreciate it. And we will chat with you next week a little bit more on NASCAR, F1, and IndyCar, and also a big race coming up in July in Wetaskiwin. So we'll touch on that as well. Have a good week.
Sounds good. Yeah, enjoy your time out on the coast here. We'll save all the water.
Yeah, well, once I find my phone, I'll enjoy it even better. So we'll have fun. All right, man. Have a good one.
Sounds good, guys. Take care.